good morning and welcome to hour one of Experts on Call. Kyle Hunter with you, and I'm excited to continue our talk on eating disorders this morning. We've been continuing this talk for the past couple months. We're learning a lot, and I've actually heard from a lot of you saying that you appreciate these segments. And this morning, a couple new guests. Dr. Jocelyn Warrock joins us from the Windsor Essex Community Health Center, and Dr. Tabe Madigo from BANA, the Bulimia Anorexia Nervosa Association. To the both of you, thank you, doctors. Appreciate you coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Ah, absolutely. And of course, you can always be a part of the show, 519-792-2559, if you do have questions. First of all, Dr. Madigo, we'll start with you. A little bit about yourself.
So I'm a psychiatrist. I work at Windsor Regional Hospital, and I also provide a consulting service to BANA, as well as to Teen Health at Windsor Essex CHC.
And Jocelyn, can we go over to you too as well and what you do?
Sure. I'm a family doctor in the community. I'm also at Windsor Regional Hospital for over 30 years and at WeCHC Teen Health for over 30 years. And I work with teens who are sick as well in the hospital with general illness.
And can we just get a picture of what it's like right now? We'll start with you, Jocelyn, and what it's like, kind of like, I guess, a daily breakdown of what you do and what you see.
You know, if I can historically go back, we didn't see eating disorders nearly to the degree we're seeing them now. Mm-hmm. So when I started, I rarely saw an eating disorder over 30 years ago. And now I can fill a full day, several days a week, with illness and eating disorders. So what I see usually is maybe one or two new people per day, and then I usually do follow-ups. And I work in a team at the Teen Health WeCHC. I work with nurse practitioners, dietitians, social workers, other physicians, and I'm extremely well supported by Dr. Madigo. I think the first thing I do when I have a client is I ask them what their day is like. So I say, tell me about your day. From the first time you get up to you go to bed at night, tell me what your thoughts are, tell me what you eat, tell me what your activities are. And usually, a typical eating disorder presentation would be, well, I get up and either I skip breakfast or I have oatmeal. And then they tell me that they maybe I might go do an exercise, I might go to the gym for an hour. And then, you know, for lunch, I might have a salad, no dressing, maybe a little protein with that. And then, you know, of course, maybe they work or they have schoolwork and they probably do some more physical activity. And then for dinner, I eat whatever my family eats. And I said, what do you drink with that? Water. And oftentimes I'll say, well, how do you feel? And they'll say, well, you know, I feel either anxious or I feel good because I'm taking good care of my body. But they're obviously there for a reason. So either somebody else has identified that they're sick or they're not feeling well. So if it's mentally not feeling well, I say, you're not giving your body enough nourishment. Do you realize that? And oftentimes then they'll break down and cry. So it's different for everybody. They present differently. But oftentimes I try to give them the opportunity to tell me why they're there and do they think they're getting enough nutrition in their body. And if they're not getting enough nutrition in their body, why aren't they? And there's a lot of guilt with them consuming more nutrients.
Yeah. I know we'll dig a little bit deeper into this, but when you say, you know, you've really saw cases, and obviously you're very busy nowadays, sadly, what has spurred that on? Why, and when did you see a big jump? Can you kind of talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I mean, I have Dr. Madigo step in here as well.
Yeah, we will get to you, David, I promise.
Because I think COVID was a big changing point for eating disorders. I think it's a lot of, that gave us a lot of time at home with social media. It gave us a lot of opportunity to be exposed to social media and unfortunately a less opportunity to socialize with people and may even do activities and team activities, social activities, and people wanted to stay fit or healthy. So a majority of these people then started trying to control what went in their body and they tried to control their looks and that just made them sicker and it made them more malnourished, which made their brain sicker. And then they tried to control more, and they got sicker again. So social media definitely has a part to play, and the more time we spend on social media, especially TikTok, we're going to get sicker. Number two, the more anxious we get, and the more mental health in terms of trying to control and being the best we can be, they try to be so good, they get sick. Yeah. So nobody ever says, I want to be an eating disorder. Nobody ever starts off saying that. What happens is their brain gets malnourished, and it just becomes this snowball effect that they just feel that they can't feed their bodies adequately.
Yeah. Tammy, your thoughts on that?
Yes. I just want to agree with Dr. Warwick. So I think mass media and social media in particular has played a huge role in what seems to be an escalation in the prevalence of eating disorder in our communities. Let's remember that cultural factors and cultural norms have a huge impact on our perception of ourselves, of our body, and what it means to be beautiful, what it means to look good, what it means to look healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So we've seen that the kind of models that are presented, especially to young people and young girls in particular, are that the thinner you are, the more beautiful you are, the better it is. So these are the things that actually have an impact and increase the incidence and the prevalence of these conditions. And in terms of social media in particular, you will know that, for example, on TikTok and on Instagram, people are showing off their bodies. I'm looking good. Look at me. I'm going from this size to that size. People talk about whether or not you have a thigh gap and so on. And that is toxic stuff for young people growing up, even for kids growing up.
Mm-hmm.
There are even chat rooms, you know, little groups and chat rooms where people discuss about how to lose weight faster,
mm-hmm.
how to quote-unquote excel at having anorexia nervosa and how to get thinner and thinner and thinner, how to beat the system even if you're attending medical appointments, how to kind of hoodwink your healthcare providers so that you can stick with the eating disorder and so on. So there's a lot of toxic stuff going on in the media, and particularly in social media, that actually is helping to drive and perpetuate these conditions.
We're seeing it with our marginalized groups as well, right?
Yes.
Yeah, maybe talk a little bit about that and what that scene is like.
Oh, totally. So we know that eating disorders occur, even though kind of in Western cultural contexts we see higher prevalence, but they occur across all cultural and social contexts, right?
Yeah.
Anorexia nervosa, bulimia nervosa, and other eating disorders. We see them on every continent, in every social cultural context. But marginalized groups, they have particular challenges that they deal with. There's the whole burden of trauma, right? So trauma occurs, you know, for all peoples, but in marginalized group, they have specific kinds of traumas that they are exposed to, right? When we know that any experience of trauma, especially childhood trauma, does contribute to the development of an eating disorder, right? And then there's a whole issue around lack of access, lack of adequate or optimal or prompt access to healthcare and to mental health care in particular. So these are all the things that put you at a higher risk of developing eating disorder, and actually maybe even possibly presenting late before it's diagnosed.
Kyle, can I just...
absolutely. Go ahead.
So I was, Dr. Maddox's right on there. Some people actually don't plan on getting thin or don't plan on decreasing their nourishment. Some people have allergies and they've limited their intake and their brain gets malnourished and that triggers illness. Some people plan on trying to be orthorexic, which is only eating healthy foods, which for a developing brain is actually very triggering and can trigger the illness because you're not meeting the nutritional needs of your brain. Some people get illnesses like Crohn's disease and get decreased intake in nutrients, which causes the brain to get malnourished and triggers the delusional brain process and what the body needs. Cannabis also contributes. A cannabis can negatively affect a developing brain and therefore makes that brain-gut connection unhealthy, and the brain is delusional and does not pick the adequate nutrition for the body.
Wow.
So nobody chooses it. You mentioned marginalized. The trans population are a big risk because their body is, they're not comfortable in what their body is and they're trying to change it. Also the poor, because again, if they don't get the nutrient the brain needs, they're at high risk of getting a malnourished brain. Does that mean all malnourished brains go on to eating disorders? No, there's a significant genetic component,
mm-hmm.
at least 88%. But anybody who's malnourished for a period of time, not a week, not a month, but probably a couple of years, are significantly at risk of their brain becoming delusional and getting sick and not meeting the nutritional requirements of their body.
Okay, Dr. Warwick, if somebody is concerned, or you have a loved one, a friend that you're concerned about, what do you do? How do you approach them?
You know,
making sure it's the right way, I guess,
you know,
right?
This is interesting because the illness, which we oftentimes will separate the illness from the person. Yes, the person is saying things, but it's because the illness is so strong in their brain.
Yeah.
It is making them feel so terrible if they don't do everything in their power to be as thin as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you love me and you're going to make me better, then the illness is going to push you away. And it's going to do everything in its power to be really mean to you and push you away. So family members and friends should not go away. Okay. They should say, I am going nowhere. I think that maybe you're not meeting your nutritional needs. I think you're sick. Maybe I could go to your doctor with you. Maybe I could go to Banna with you. Maybe I can get a counselor with you. And they may say no, but then you say, why don't we have dinner together? Why don't we have some nutrition together? And yet you just continue to reapproach the subject and say, I am here for you. Mm-hmm. That person's going to push you away, but don't go anywhere. Be consistent, be loving, be kind, and be firm.
Yeah, well, I like that. Dr. Madigo, your thoughts?
And there's a few things that are also useful. A person with an eating disorder is naturally very sensitive to mm-hmm. their appearance, body weight, and image, and so on. And I think as family members and loved ones, we would do well not to comment on those things, kind of like, you look thin, you look big, you know, all of that. But rather more along the lines of, and as Dr. Warwick said, more along the lines of, we worry that you're not getting enough nutrition. Yeah. You can see that your body needs more nutrition, rather than specifically making reference on weight, because that can be triggering for these patients. So if we try and keep it at that level, but also maybe focus more around the emotional condition of our loved one.
Mm-hmm.
You just seem to be more sad or anxious. How can I help you? Can we have a meal together? And that sort of thing, providing that kind of support. And as Dr. Warwick said, say, look, can I go with you to see the doctor? Can I go with you to see the dietitian or the counselor and so on?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that might be a little bit more effective.
Yeah, come with love, right? That's what it's all about. Family member is somebody that you love.
I was going to add on to Dr. Medica's right on there in terms of we judge people so much in our community. And when you say to an eating disorder who's lost weight, you look good, you're reinforcing the illness.
Mm-hmm.
When you say to them, and oftentimes when they've started to lose weight, people will say, oh, you look so good with that weight loss. We should actually never say that to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell young people, the only reason you should be losing weight is you're dying. We should, nobody in the real world should be losing weight. We should always be eating three meals and doing physical activity and be balanced. And if we're balanced, it doesn't matter if we're 200 pounds or 100 pounds. It doesn't matter what we look like. We're balanced and we're well.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really like the word healthy. I don't like the word commenting on people on how they're looking. I think we should say, how was your day?
Yep.
What did you do? Were you the best to yourself and to everybody else today?
Mm-hmm.
If you took care of your body, which is the temple, and you did the best you could for your body, and you ate your three meals, and you did some activity, and you spent time with people, and you did your best in your job or work, then you know what? You should be proud of that day.
Mm-hmm.
And you should not judge yourself by your grades or by your salary or by your weight. Those are external factors, and those aren't really what make us.
Yeah, boy, great words there, doctor. Really do appreciate that. For more information, again, we have Banna in with us, banna.ca, BANA.ca. The number over there, 519-969-2112, 519-969-2112. Also, toll-free number, 1-855-969-5530. And we also have the Windsor Essex Community Health Center here. Their website is WECHC.org. So WECHC.org. If you're looking for Banna, it's just down the road as well. 1500 Olette Avenue. It's unit 100. We'll take the break and come back. I do want to talk a little bit about recovery and what that looks like with the doctors next here on Experts on Call with Kyle Horner on AIM 800.
This is Experts on Call,
an advertising feature on AM 800 CKLW, the information station.
Good morning, and welcome back to Experts on Call. Kyle Hunter with you this morning, continuing our talk over the past few months on eating disorders. And with us today, a couple new guests, two doctors in studio today. Dr. Jocelyn Warwaryuk is with us with the Windsor Essex Community Health Center. Their website is WECHC.org. And with Banna, Dr. Tebe Medigo. And Banna is banna.ca, BANA.ca. The number over there is 519-969-2112, toll-free, 1-855-969-5530. And, of course, Banna is the Bulimia Anorexia Nervosa Association. We always want you to be a part of the show. Our number, 519-792-2559. An interesting question here, Dr. Madigo. Maybe we'll go with you on this one here. Can the wonderful doctors, and they are, they're great today. We really do appreciate them coming in studio. Speak to the relationship between autism and eating disorders.
That's such an interesting question, Kyle. So there are two aspects to that. One of the things we know is that people with autism spectrum disorders, one of the struggles they have is sensory difficulties. So they may have heightened sensitivity or sometimes lowered sensitivity, whether it's textures, as it relates to the skin, but also tastes, smells, those kind of sensory modalities are often altered in people with autism spectrum disorder. Now, you can imagine that that's going to have an impact on your ability to tolerate certain types of foods based on taste, smell, texture, even appearance, right? Mm-hmm. The other thing is that with autism spectrum, they tend to struggle with rigid thinking, like things must only be this way, and when I eat, I must only eat in this particular way, and if the spoon is not in the correct place, I cannot eat, or if the arrangement of the food components on the plate is not the way it should be, then I cannot eat. You know, those kinds of struggles with rigidity, right? Now, those issues kind of do have an impact on how a person eats and their ability to nourish themselves. That's just at a general level. But now when you come with that baggage of struggles and you have other factors, genetic and environmental and societal factors that does trigger eating disorders, you're already at a higher risk. And so people with autism disorders have a higher risk of eating disorder for those reasons, but particularly with this condition, which is called ARFID, is the acronym we use, Avoidant Restrictive Food Intake Disorder, we do see an overlay of these two conditions, people with autism, where they do also sometimes present with this avoidant restrictive food intake disorder just because of struggles with texture, appearance, smells of food, you know, altered sensitivity that unfortunately puts them at a higher risk for this condition.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Doctor, would you like to add to that, Dr. Wolryak?
Well, I think Dr. Madigo covered that very well. ARFID, actually, a lot of my anorexics would like to say that they are ARFID because anorexia nervosa, of course, does avoid and restrict food intake. And most ARFID patients do usually have to have a significant usually have some type of OCD or autism feature. I think that the treatment still is nutrition, and that is the key point, and the diagnosis doesn't need to be necessarily nailed down. We can be flexible in the diagnosis. It's more important that we get nutrition to the brain.
Definitely.
When does it typically develop, I guess, when it comes to eating disorders? Youth, young age, help us out.
Yes. Yeah. You know, the vast majority of cases, eating disorders develop during adolescence or young adulthood, kind of that region from early adolescence to the mid-20s.
Mm-hmm.
In recent years, unfortunately, we are seeing an increasing incidence of these conditions developing during childhood, you know, before the teenage age. So that is a concern. And I think some of it is linked to what we already spoke about kind of mass media and social media and kind of the impact that these influences have on people at younger and younger ages. On the other hand, there are people who develop eating disorder at all age. That does happen as well. But the vast majority, adolescents and young adulthood.
Can we talk about long-term impact as well? And feel free, Dr. Wolryak, to add on to what Dr. Madigo said. But just a little bit of that.
I was going to say that we think we identify people by their weight, and we therefore pick up the eating disorder. But unfortunately, atypical anorexic nervosa is people that have lost, that were maybe a higher body weight, had lost significant weight. They look relatively, in our social kind of assessing of them, normal, which I hate that word, but they actually are not meeting the nutritional needs of their brain.
Mm.
So their brain and some of their organs, because their brain is an organ, but also maybe their heart, maybe their bones, are not getting the nutritional needs they need, and we aren't picking them up, and they're very sick, and they can get missed. And that's scary to me. So if anybody has lost a lot of weight, we have to be worried about that, especially during the developmental years when their brain needs nutrition. So I just didn't want to miss those clients, and we have to be aware of that. The other point I was going to say is that when they're developing, they're young, and their brains are developing, they're very susceptible to behaviors that their parents do. So if you drink, the chance of your children drinking increases. Mm. If you smoke, the chances of your children smoking increases. Well, if you diet and you are trying to do what your doctor says and eat a very lean diet or maybe fasting or maybe eating an orthorexic diet, you're doing exactly right by your doctor. However, your children are being exposed to inappropriate eating patterns mm-hmm. and getting inappropriate nutrients for their body and brain. Mm. So I want us all to be aware that children have different nutritional needs of their brain. Canada's food guide, all food is good. We don't want them to get rigid. We want to keep variety. We want to keep them normalized in terms of their eating. And whatever they look like, that is beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in the past segment there, we were talking about, you know, the words to use and how do you approach them. We care about them. They're family members, right? We want the best for them. When should they actually seek help? Like, when is there a time? Just help us out, Dr. Madigo, on that.
So there's several things that we should think about.
Okay.
And I think I want to just go back to what Dr. Warwick said about significant weight loss. So whenever that happens, it is an indicator to seek help. And here we are talking about approaching your primary care provider, your family doctor, your nurse practitioner. That's kind of where we encourage people to start, right? Mm-hmm. Changing weight. But of course, anyone who notices, they notice or their family notices that they have significant anxiety about food, about their body weight, about their body appearance, it is bothering them. It's affecting their ability to nourish themselves adequately. A lot of these patients will have difficulties with adequate meals, but also they have difficulties with eating with other people
mm-hmm.
because it's so stressful to eat. And then you feel like people are watching you. What are you eating? How much are you eating? Are you going to finish your meal? It's very, very stressful, mm-hmm. right? Sometimes they will, you know, when they eat, they will want to eat in isolation, go into a restaurant with family or friends to have a meal. It's very difficult, very stressful. People tend to avoid that. So, yes, when you notice those kinds of struggles, emotional struggles around food, around body weight, and people, you know, checking themselves on the scale frequently, looking at themselves, you know, on the mirror. So all of those are indicators that one is not doing well, one is having eating disorder type symptoms. In addition to restricting food intake, sometimes people will engage in other activities for weight management, such as vomiting after eating or using laxatives or increasing their level of exercise and using diet pills and all this. So this is kind of a number of different things that people do. And whenever these things, people struggle with these thoughts, emotions, and behaviors, that's a strong indicator that they need to come forward for help.
Mm-hmm. And if you are looking for help, of course, again, Banna in studio here, banna.ca. The number is 519-969-2112, toll-free, 1-855-969-5530. Dr. Madigo, you were also saying, you know, again, younger age, right? We're seeing it at a younger age when it starts developing here. Banna will do workshops. They will go into schools. You will talk to schools. You will talk to, again, young children, young adults about this and making sure they're aware of this. So you can reach out to Banna for that as well, banna.ca. Again, the number, 519-969-2112. Also, Windsor Essex Community Health Center. Their website is wechc.org. wechc.org. We'll take the break and come back. It's Experts on Call with Kyle Horner on AM 800.
You're listening to Experts on Call,
an advertising feature on AM 800 CKLW, the information station.
Good morning and welcome back to Experts on Call. Kyle Horner with you this morning, continuing our talk on eating disorders. Two great doctors in studio, Dr. Jocelyn Warwariak, Windsor Essex Community Health Center. The website there, wechc.org, wechc.org. Dr. Tebe Madigo with Banna. The website, banna.ca. The number for them, 519-969-2112, 1-855-969-5530 is the toll-free number. They're located just down the road at 1500 Olette Avenue, 1500 Olette Avenue, Unit 100. If you have a question for them, 519-792-2559. Of course, Banna, the Bulimia Anorexia Nervosa Association. And Dr. Warwariak, we'll start with you on this one. Why do they come in? Why do they come in to actually see you?
So I'm a family doctor by training, and so they often are coming to see me for multiple reasons, and I pick up that they're not getting nourishment. So they might come in because they think they have ADHD, because a malnourished brain cannot focus, or because they're anxious, depressed. And again, malnourished brain, not getting enough nutrition for that brain to function. Or they can't lose any more weight, and they want to get their thyroid checked because they want to keep losing weight, especially the atypicals that may present as a what we consider a normal BMI, and they want to lose more weight. Or they come in because they have constipation or have lost their period. So there's lots of reasons, again, why they present. And then when I identify that they're not meeting the nutritional needs, then we have to approach them in a different manner. And I have to say, look, you're not taking care of your body. There's no shame in having a diagnosis of an anorexia. And again, I'm not rigid on the diagnosis. Your brain is not getting the nutritional needs it needs. We need to have weight gain. And then your focus is going to delay, but it's going to come back. Your mood is going to be a delay again, but it's going to come back. You're going to have your period again. And you're going to be able to socialize again. And you're going to become normalized again.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the word shame. It's one thing that we want to make sure we don't do, right? No shame. Break the stigma. Because nobody chooses this.
Exactly. Yeah. Especially families and parents and some cultures, when I say that your daughter has your son has an eating disorder, they don't want anybody to know. They don't want the family members to know. They don't want the school to know. And I'm like, well, how am I going to get your daughter better if we don't have that support of extended family, if we don't have that support of the school? The schools are doing a great job, but they can't treat your child.
Yeah.
I need you to treat your child, which is a very difficult job, because we talked about words that trigger. And no, we are in a society with, we have disordered eating, we have healthy eating, we have orthorexic eating, we want to be a certain BMI, we have images on social media. So we're surrounded by what we should look like, and it's causing this disordered eating and this unhealthy, quote unquote, because I hate the word healthy, or I call it abnormal lifestyle, is actually negatively impacting our youth.
Dr. Madigo, if you want to continue that, go ahead, then we're going to get into recovery, okay?
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
And just something that Dr. Warwick mentioned reminds me of how I sometimes explain it to my patients, looking at the link between kind of like the mental symptoms, emotional symptoms of eating disorders. The patient is surprised that the mood is low all the time, the mind feels foggy, they can't concentrate, they feel more anxious and so on and so forth. I will say to the patient, well, a lot of research has been shown and it's been found, that the human brain doesn't function well without food. And often when I say that, they smile and just acknowledge that.
Yeah.
It sounds so basic and yet it's so true.
Yeah, exactly, right? Even like, we just get grumpy too, right?
We do.
Just grumpy
we
and
do.
Our moods change. And
we do.
Yeah, like our life evolves around food for a lot of us. So that's what it's about.
Well, that's what the body needs.
That's it.
You know,
yeah,
what
exactly.
The brain needs.
Actually, I was going to, the cues, the hunger. You mentioned hunger.
Yeah.
Hunger, fullness, nausea. Those are feelings.
Mm.
They come from the brain, not the stomach.
Mm-hmm.
So if the brain has not been fed and is not working accurately on assessing what your needs of your body are, then you have to eat mechanically. You have to use your intelligent brain. And sometimes you need to use your parents' intelligent brain or your spouse's intelligent brain or your loved ones, because you aren't meeting your needs of your body and you can't make those decisions and calculations because your brain is malnourished.
Yeah, boy, great stuff. Absolutely. Dr. Madigo, let's get into recovery and what that actually looks like. Where does it start?
So once again, we recommend that you start with your primary care provider, right? That would be your family doctor, your nurse practitioner. A lot of people in our community and across Canada do not have a primary care provider, and that is difficult. So it may mean that you go to a walk-in clinic. And if symptoms are more serious, you may even need to go to an urgent care clinic or even to the emergency room, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of where you have to get into the system, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you will get an assessment. You will need to share these concerns and with your primary care provider. And hopefully, once that has been done, an assessment has been done, and if an eating disorder is diagnosed, then you will be started on a treatment program, which, as Dr. Warwick has emphasized, the foundation of it is really nutrition. That's really the big thing that yeah. that the patient needs. There may be other things that need to be done, but we talk about nutrition, meal planning. We emphasize 3 meals a day with snacks in between. That's really important. Mm-hmm. We encourage that because that's kind of we are able to get optimal nutrition when we do it like that.
Yeah.
A lot of people with eating disorders struggle with restricting intake, skipping meals, fasting. The problem, unfortunately, is that that sets them up to perpetuate the eating disorder, right? Mm. So if we are restricting for periods of time and then we eat more at other times, maybe then we feel guilty that we've eaten had a big meal and we want to restrict more or we want to purge. It just got the cycles keeps going, right?
Yeah.
And Dr. Warwick has mentioned this point, which is very important, that the more we restrict, the more malnourished our brains are, the less we are able to think in rational and clear ways, right? So it's as if the brain becomes delusional. We cannot think clearly. We become irrational. We look at ourselves when we are very underweight and we think we actually fat or overweight. That's mm-hmm. It's just like distorted thoughts, distorted thinking patterns. And those are perpetuated by malnutrition, right? So when you get into treatment, nutrition is the cornerstone of treatment. That's kind of where things start.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people need medications for other symptoms, whether they have abdominal bloating, right? Because if we're not eating properly for months or even for years, the bowel movements are going to slow down, right? We feel bloated. We may develop constipation. We may have abdominal cramps. So there are symptomatic medications that can be used to take care of those kinds of symptoms. The other thing, of course, is that when people have an eating disorder, often they also have other mental health struggles as well. They may be having an anxiety disorder, they may be having OCD, they may be having depression, right? In addition to the eating disorder. So we find that those other conditions also need to be treated.
Mm.
When we talk about nutrition, let's not forget about the importance of nutritional supplements that a lot of these patients will need, things like iron and vitamin D, because again, with chronic malnutrition, they've been running low on a lot of those macronutrients, so yeah. that in even minerals, and those would need to be checked, monitored, and corrected during the process of care.
Is full recovery possible?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. And Dr. Warwick and I mean, we have the privilege of seeing people that have attended treatment for an eating disorder. And just to mention, treatment happens at different levels.
Sure.
So there's primary care level. And then you may attend a specialized program like such as is offered at BANA or at Teen Health at WCHC.
Mm-hmm.
There are, specialized treatment programs, not so much in Windsor Essex, but in places like London and the Greater Toronto area, where they will have an eating disorder unit where mm-hmm. people can go for intensive treatment and residential treatment. Yeah. Those are different levels of care that patients have,
mm-hmm.
May need. At a local level, sometimes patients need to come into an acute hospital like Windsor Regional Hospital if they are medically unstable, where they will receive intensive help and support with nutrition and other medical supports, right,
mm-hmm.
to address medical complications that do arise from time to time, right? So these are all the different types of interventions that patients typically need. So there are patients who actually, after going through treatment, actually get on the journey of recovery, and
mm-hmm.
then they can be kind of in remission or recovery for years.
Mm-hmm.
Some patients tend to struggle more in the longer term, where the illness is controlled, they struggle, but it's controlled, they're able to function as they receive help and support over the years.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Warwick, would you like to speak on that too as we wrap up?
Yeah, I think that recovery is possible for sure. It is hard. There's not like a treatment program in, you go in, you get cured. It is a long term recovery. But I always tell my patients, everything that takes a little bit of work is worth it. We're not wimps. We're going to stay. We're going to stick to the plan. I'm going nowhere. Your family members are going to go nowhere. And we're going to live longer than the illness.
Mm-hmm.
That's the goal. And as Dr. Matico said, sometimes when we skip a meal, it can trigger the illness. So I have people that have gone into remission and cure, but then maybe a stress or an illness has triggered some weight loss.
Mm-hmm.
And the clients can identify it because their thoughts come back to them. All they think about all day are eating disorders. Think about food.
Mm-hmm.
It's an inappropriate relationship with food. So they think about it. They might want to cook it. They might want to read about it. They read recipes. They watch shows. They think about it all the time. There's food, good food and bad food, and it's associated with how they feel. So everything in their life is associated with food.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to stop those thought processes and just eat food.
Mm.
And when they actually are recovered, we want them to continue to eat mechanically. We do not want them to skip meals. And if those thought processes are coming back, your brain is telling you to not eat food, but what you actually need to do is to eat more food.
Yep.
And when we talk about supplements, we often refer to Ensures too, or Boosts.
Yep. Yep.
So those are meal supplements, and they're a great way actually, because it's a lot of work to eat all that food.
Mm-hmm.
Again, not an easy treatment plan. But as I said, you can add those back in, and there is there an easy way for you not to think about it, but you can get extra nutrition in your day and heal your brain.
They're delicious as well. Yeah, the Ensure, I actually use them for, because I have cystic fibrosis, so
okay.
I struggle to get, and so doctors always like the Ensure, the chocolate ones are very delicious, so if you are looking for something, right there. Yeah, that I can help you out with that one. Go ahead, Dr. Madigal.
Sounds good.
It is very good, yeah.
Yes, and I think while we're talking about nutrition, I also like to quote one of the ancient fathers of medicine, Hippocrates, who famously said, "Let food be thy medicine, and let medicine be thy food."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, boy, well said. I will say, if you are struggling in this city, you're very blessed to have these two doctors. The passion comes through the radio, that is for sure. I will let you know. And if you are looking for help or you want some more information, here are some ways you can go about it. Banna.ca. The number, 519-969-2112, toll-free number, 1-855-969-5530. Also, the Windsor Essex Community Health Center, the website there, wechc.org, wechc.org. We'll take the final break and come back. It's Experts on Call with Kyle Horner.
This is Experts on Call,
an advertising feature on AM 800 CKLW, the information station.
That's right. Welcome back to Experts on Call. Kyle Horner with you, wrapping up our talk on eating disorders this morning. With us, two doctors to help us out. Dr. Jocelyn Woriak with the Windsor Essex Community Health Center and Dr. Tabe Madigo with Banna. Banna.ca is the way to go about that online. 519-969-2112, the number for Banna, or toll-free 1-855-969-5530. WeCHC.org for the Windsor Essex Community Health Center. Let's talk about adult behavior. And Dr. Woriak, we'll start with you on this one. It really can have an impact on children, right? The younger generation.
Yes, definitely. We are role models. Things we say, things we do, it definitely influence our children. A lot of adults now are really being pushed by the medical community to be healthy. So that we are now having Ozempic, and we're having lean diets and orthorexic food, and we're drinking almond milk and eating rice cakes. And this is fine for potentially an older person that is significantly obese, associated with coronary artery disease, hypertension, diabetes. I understand why they're doing it. However, when a child is developing and is in that environment, they're actually internalizing all those thoughts, and they actually are thinking they're doing the best for their body by eating this lean diet and by not getting all the nutrients they need. So they cut out foods like milk, and they cut out foods like bad foods, you know, cakes and desserts, and they cut out the carbs, and they think again that they're doing the right thing for their body because the whole family is eating this way. But that's very dangerous for a child, so we have to be careful. And I'm not saying that the adults are doing the wrong thing, but we have to be very aware that what we say and what we do are going to influence them. Words like thin, fat, chubby, those are not words we should ever use to describe our child.
Yeah.
Children will go through puberty. They will actually fill out a little bit before they get taller. And parents oftentimes say, well, I'm worried they're getting chunky, and then they're going to feel bad that they're chunky. I don't really know anybody who is unhappy because they are heavy.
Mm.
I mean, we're not talking the morbid obesity, but if your BMI is 30, 35, 40, I don't know anybody who's sad all day long because of their weight. But I do know that when you're actually having an eating disorder, that you are constantly hard on yourself about your size, and you're hard on yourself about what you're intaking, and your brain is very hard on you, and that is a very unhappy way to live. So even though parents think if they're thin, they might be happy, there's no association whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we feel happy because of, again, who we are and what we're doing, not how we look.
Yeah, yeah. And as we wrap up here, I know you want to touch on fasting. Speaking of growing up and I guess emulating what your parents or what your guardians do, you kind of bring that into your own life. Fasting was one thing that you wanted to mention.
Oh, yeah. Well, we should never fast. I think it's pretty obvious. I think the children, when they need to break the fast, they need breakfast. Breakfast is essential. Mm. And so when we fast, our brain isn't getting nourishment. The brain's getting hangry and depressed and sad and losing focus. And it is our responsibility as parents, actually. When we go to high school, even, pack their lunches. Make sure they have breakfast before they go out. Do not comment on their size. All food is good food. Make sure they're getting all food groups. Don't make sure they're not having just orthorexic food. Mm. We are responsible to our children till their brain is fully established at 28. So even at 20, and your kid's in university, you might say, well, you have a test day. Did you eat? I mean, that's okay. Mm-hmm. We're parents.
Yeah.
It's okay to say, you need to get food in your body.
Dr. Madigal, you want to wrap us up?
Yes, just a quick comment, and thanks so much again, Kyle, and thanks, Dr. Wawarak. Very great insights. One of the things, just to quickly mention here, is that we're discussing a bit earlier about different kinds of treatment that are helpful for mm-hmm. people with an eating disorder. When we talk about medications, let's also realize that if somebody has just an eating disorder, don't have other psychiatric disorders, for example, there are still psychiatric medications that can be very useful to manage the kinds of anxiety that people struggle with on a day-to-day basis, right? Those medications can be very useful. Often they can help and have benefit within days or within a few weeks, so mm-hmm. they're certainly worth a try. We are sometimes even able to prescribe medication that can be taken around mealtime just to address the high levels of anxiety that people experience, right? So that they're able to feed themselves better. So I just want to emphasize the fact that help is available, mm-hmm. effective treatments are available, and we just encourage everyone just to reach out.
Thank you so much, doctors. Really do appreciate it. Some great info this hour. Don't be strangers, okay? I'll be reaching out when we need you.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having us.
For the help, here are some numbers and some contacts here. Online, bana.ca. Also, the Windsor Essex Community Health Center online is wecac.org. And the number for BANA, 519-969-2112. Also, a toll-free number, 1-855-969-5530. They're located right down the road, 1500 Olette Avenue. It's Unit 100. We'll take the break and come back. It's Experts on Call with Kyle Horner on AM 800.